This is the Comedy Writers' Own Show, starring the writers for America's greatest comedians. From Hollywood, the American Broadcasting Company brings you to a transcribed and actual comedy writing session on the air. Working from a suggested outline for a radio show, our panel of writers will joke up a script just as they do in the writing sessions for their own popular programs. Our guest writer tonight is Snag Waris, writer for Bing Crosby. And here to guide our session is our moderator, radio's well-known producer, Ben Brady.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Comedy Writers Show. Before we get into our writing session tonight, why don't you gentlemen on the panel introduce yourselves to our audience?
I write for Bob Hope. My name is Roger Price, and I'm 29 years old.
I write for Bing Crosby. My name is Snag Waris, and I'm 35.
I write for Eddie Cantor. My name is Sidney Fields, and I'm 26.
I write for Abbott and Costello. My name is Leonard Stern. And if Sidney is 26, I haven't been born yet.
Well, as you've just heard, our panel tonight consists of three writers and the biggest incubator baby you have ever seen. Tonight's outline for a comedy show was suggested by actress Maureen O'Hara. Now, as you know, each week some well-known personality sends us an outline which serves as a basis for creating a comedy script on the air. Reed Browning, will you please read Maureen O'Hara's suggestion?
Well, Ben, Miss O'Hara writes, quote, I'd like to see you write a Bob Hope program. For the opening monologue, you could use a topical subject like the political conventions, then do a spot with Jerry Colonna, and for a guest star, Hope's sidekick, Bing Crosby. And for a sketch, Bob and Bing might satirize Hope's newest movie, Paleface.
Well, gentlemen, there's our challenge for tonight. Now, remember, we have less than 30 minutes to complete a comedy script on the air. We're fortunate in having Mr. Waris of the Crosby Show and Mr. Price of the Hope program on our panel tonight. Before we begin, would you gentlemen like to offer any suggestions? Mr. Waris?
Well, as long as this is a Hope and Crosby program, I think we're very lucky on account of both of these men can both do straight lines and both of them can deliver laugh lines. And as long as both of them are really so adept at this kind of stuff, I believe we should give all the laugh lines to that ever-loving Bing Crosby.
Oh. Well, you have just heard from the Bob Hope writer. We won't go into that now. Let's begin first with the Bob Hope monologue, which generally precedes his show. That would be the political convention, let us say, in Philadelphia. Mr. Fields?
Well, Hope would start off with one of those. This is Bob reporting from the political Democratic convention in Philadelphia. Hope, I won't say that Philadelphia is crowded because of the convention. I won't say Philadelphia is crowded. All I know is that I danced three dances with my date in a long black gown before I found out it was the Supreme Court justice.
Well, that's a good start. Mr. Stern?
Sidney threw me a thought. Speaking about Philadelphia being crowded, Hope could say, I have difficulty getting a hotel room. I couldn't get a hotel room. Finally, I went up to one clerk in desperation. I said, do I register with you? And the clerk said, you're cute, but you're not my type.
All right, Mr. Waris?
Well, to follow Lenny Stern's gag and also to follow continuity, Hope can say, one hotel clerk finally said to me, look, I think I can give you a room, but you'll have to make your own bed. And I said, well, I know you're short of help. I won't mind making my own bed. And the clerk said, good. Here's a hammer and nail. Get busy.
Well, now, we're really going along with this monologue. Mr. Price?
Mr. Hope could say, the government is very economical now. At the convention, they just had a big party, and they had 27 bottles of champagne left over. And they're really economical. Just so they wouldn't waste the champagne, the president called up the Brooklyn Navy Yard and had them build 27 new battleships.
Well, at the convention, Hope could say one fella got up to make a speech and everybody left the auditorium except this one little fella down front. And the speaker got very indignant. He said, how do you like that? Everybody left except you. I want to thank you and I think you're a gentleman. And the little guy said, what kind of gentleman? I'm the next speaker.
Mr. Price.
Because a reporter could be interviewing one of the congressmen, and the reporter says to the congressman, he says, how do you stand on foreign aid? And the congressman says, and he says, how do you feel about the single tax? And the congressman says, and he says, well, what do you think about the Taft-Hartley bill? And the congressman says, And the reporter says, well, thanks for the interview. And the guy says, okay, but don't quote me.
Very good. Any, Mr. Field?
Well, this sounds like sort of a screwy kind of a thing. The guy says, Hope says, that they have trouble finding rooms for the delegates from the various states, you know, because they had to divide one suite in the hotel among the different states, you know, and they gave it out according to the size of the states. For instance, like Texas was the biggest state, so they gave Texas the living room, and then California was the next biggest state, so they gave California the dining room, and the next biggest state was Illinois, and they gave Illinois the bedroom. And then Rhode Island gave...
I'm afraid. I'm afraid we'll have to. Mr. Fields is now lying on the floor. I'm afraid we'll have to pass him by for a minute until he recovers. Mr. Ware, do you want to go?
I'll try. Hope can say one delegate. Buttonholed me and said, listen, I have a great idea how my candidate can get more votes. And I said to him, well, how? And he said, well, I'll put my candidate in an airplane. The airplane will go up to about 20,000 feet. And from 20,000 feet, my candidate will jump out of the airplane over the city without a parachute. I said, my goodness, how will that get him more votes? And the delegate said, sympathy.
Well, according to writing conventions, I think you've handled the subject of political conventions very well. Now, let's get to the second part of our show and introduce Jerry Colonna into the script. Professor Colonna's type of humor is represented by a certain wild zaniness. Mr. Price, this seems to be right down your alley. Have you any ideas there?
An alley's sort of a dead end. Well, the first thing, Ben, on the Hope Show, when Mr. Colonna Jerry comes in, it almost always opens with a phone call. You know, the professor's out somewhere, he phones in, and we have a formula joke, something goes something like this. Phone rings, and Bob answers, and he says, hello. And a voice says, hello, Hope, this is Colonna. And Hope says, Colonna, where are you calling from? And he says, the corner drugstore. And Hope says, why are you talking so loud? And Colonna says, store isn't open yet.
Good, typical Colonna joke. Magler?
It might also be a phone call where the same thing, you know, the phone rings, and Hope answers it. And then you hear Colonna's voice say, hello, Hope. And Hope says, Professor Colonna, where are you? And Colonna says, why, I'm out in the middle of the ocean in a rowboat with 700 people. And Hope says, Professor Colonna, he says, that's ridiculous. 700 people cannot fit into a rowboat. Then there's that little pause, and you hear Colonna's voice say, sorry, some of you fellas will have to get off.
Do you think you're sufficiently recovered, Sidney?
Well, I was thinking,
as long as
they're on the phone, it might be a cute thing for Hope to say, Colonna, where are you? And Colonna says, I'm swimming in the pool at the YWCA. And Hope says, the YWCA, that's for women. How can you be swimming there in that pool? And Colonna says, I don't ask questions, I just have fun.
He'd gone with that from the farm angle. I think this would be a typical Professor Colonna thing. Hope says, Professor, you know nothing about farming. And Colonna says, oh, yes, I do, Hope. In fact, I've just crossed a watermelon with goldenrod. And Hope says, you crossed watermelon with goldenrod? He says, what did you get? And Colonna says, a watermelon, but when you slice it, it sneezes out the seeds.
That's the kind of a joke you can go on with. He says, I'm crossing cabbages with razor blades. I grow coleslaw.
Very good. Very good. Mr. Ware?
Or he says, I just crossed a raccoon with a kangaroo and a monkey. And now I've got the only fur coat with pockets that can hang itself in the closet.
Mr. Stern.
Oh, Snags crossing the animals gave me a thought. He says, I'm crossing a chicken with a racehorse. Now I've got the only horse that lays its own odds.
Gentlemen, I think we've done a pretty good job in establishing the zany character of Mr. Colonna. In fact, I believe we've done pretty well in establishing some zany characters on our own panel. And now a word from our...
Ben?
Mr. Price?
Before Reed, the announcer, goes on, this would be a good spot to do one of those facetious commercials we've been doing.
You know? A facetious commercial? Do you have anything in mind?
No, but I think it's a good spot.
Mr. Ware?
Say, how about this for a silly commercial? The announcer says, ladies, try Fuzz, the only soap in the world that cleans does.
Well, Mr. Price, it looks like you started something,
yes,
Mr. Field.
That's one of those things you can have fun with. This is Fuzz is the only soap in the market that is not guaranteed, mind you, not guaranteed to give you the schoolgirl complexion. It isn't even guaranteed to make your skin smoother. It's not even guaranteed to float. Its sole purpose is to keep you company in the bathtub.
Well, do you want to take that any further, Mr. Warren?
I was thinking perhaps we could do something with the mail-in angle, where the announcer says, remove the wrapper, write your telephone number on it, and mail it in to us. You see, this is a new type of quiz program. When we get the wrapper, we phone you. And if you're home, you send us $900.
Very good. Mr. Price?
You can say, so remember, Fuzz, spelled backwards, is Zuff. It doesn't mean much, but remember, when you go to your butcher, say Zuff, Zuff, and he'll throw you a bone.
This is an excellent commercial. Mr. Stern?
Oh, picking up Snag's idea of the contest, the announcer could say, remember, all entries postmarked after midnight November 30th will be postmarked December 1st.
Well, I guess that washes up the soap commercial. Now, before we try to create the jokes for the second part of our show, here is a word from our announcer, Reed Browning.
Everyone likes a bargain. We all like to know we're getting more than our money's worth. And buying United States security bonds will get you more than your money's worth, a return of $4 for every $3 invested. Better take advantage now of the opportunity to buy United States security bonds. They can be purchased at banks or post offices or through the payroll savings plan where you work. Think of your future today and buy United States security bonds. And now back to the Comedy Writers Show, where the writers for Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Abbott and Costello, and Eddie Cantor are creating a comedy script based on an outline suggested by actress Maureen O'Hara.
Thank you, Reed. One of the greatest facets of American radio humor is the insult routine. And two of the greatest exponents of this type of humor are Bing Crosby and Bob Hope. Now, although Bing and Bob are the best of friends, they have created a form of comedy that will be around for a long time. And according to Miss O'Hara's outline for the Bob Hope script, the guest star should be Bing Crosby. Now, it seems this is a great opportunity to open up a routine like that. So have you any ideas there? Mr. Ware?
Well, I think this should be very, very easy on account of it's Hope and Crosby. All we've got to do is write down, hello, Bob, and hello, Bing. And from that point on, those two guys will ad-lib the rest of the show themselves.
You mean you'd like to go now?
I can
surprise.
Snag, I don't know how you write the Crosby Show, but on the Hope Show we use jokes.
Is that the new way?
Mr. Field.
Well, if they're talking about pictures, Hope can say he wants to find out what makes Crosby such a great screen lover. You know, Crosby is very, very, very much loved on and off the screen. So he says, Bing, how do you go about selecting a leading lady? So Bing says, well, I'm very careful. When I select a leading lady, I examine them very carefully. I look at them for poise, for intelligence, for charm, and for all the cultural things. He says, what do you look at in a girl? And Hope says, the same thing you do, Bing, only I don't lie about it.
Fine, Mr. Fields. Mr. Stern?
I'll
Bob could say to Crosby, he says, Bing, you dress so sloppy. He says, look how sloppy you... You dress as sloppy as Sidney Field. And Crosby would say, who's Sidney Field? And Hope would be amazed and say, don't you listen to the Comedy Writers Show? No joke, but a plug.
Well, of course, we're very grateful to Bob Hope for that plug.
Yeah. Hope uses Harris? The plug, and Crosby runs the plugs in the races.
Mr. Warris, do you seem to be hot or disturbed or something?
No, I just feel a little bit strange trying to think up jokes in front of a microphone.
Oh, I see. Well,
I mean, normally when I work, I like to pace up and down, and I make notes on little pieces of paper. Here you've got me trapped at a table. I feel strange.
Well, unfortunately, we have to do it that way. Mr. Stern, did you...
I was going to say that Snag is right. You know, all writers have idiosyncrasies and write in different ways. I know at home I write in the kitchen. I like to be near food. I'm always...
Well, I know that might be... Is your kitchen large enough to accommodate our audience? We'll all come over sometime.
Yes, I have an idiosyncrasy. I can't write unless I'm lying on my back with my feet up against the wall.
Fact, I write like that.
Mr. Fry?
I'd just like to say, Ben, that I think I must be a freak. I write sitting at a table with a typewriter.
Mr. Stern.
I just had this thought. If it's Hope and Crosby, they could talk about horse races, which is naturally something that Crosby is interested in. And Hope could say that even Crosby's kids are racing fans. The youngest one apologized for coming in fourth.
When it comes to Crosby's horses, I don't think any apologies are necessary. Bing is lucky the kid didn't come in tenth. Mr. Fry?
I got a suggestion that I think we should bring in... Miss Vera Vague is a very fine comedian on the show. We have mentioned so far, and she comes in, and naturally, she'd defend Crosby, because he's a man. And she says, Bob, you shouldn't talk that way about Mr. Crosby, because Mr. Crosby has added greatly to the musical heritage of this country, and he's added greatly to the culture of this country. Hope says, yeah, and he hasn't done bad to the population, either.
And that's all right. Mr. Warren?
With Hope and Crosby on the program, I think we should write in something about golf. Something where, like, Bing would say to Hope, he'd say, Bob, how is your golf game? And Bob says, mighty fine, great, sensational. Because yesterday I played some golf with Dorothy L'Amour. She hit her ball and it went into the rough. And then she went into the rough. And then my ball went into the rough. And then I went into the rough. And Bing says, what happened? And Hope says, rough, 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 rough.
That was not only a good joke, but a wonderful acting job, Mr. Warren. Fine. Mr. Fields?
Thank you, Ben Brady. I think...
I wasn't complimenting you.
I'm sorry. Taking my cue from Snag about golf, he says, Crosby, you shouldn't take chances playing golf. It's awful dangerous for a man your age to be caught next to a hole in the ground. Oh, you can get a topper. And Crosby says, Hope, you look like you just crawled out of a hole in the ground. Isn't that horrible?
I think you should not have tried to top yourself. Mr. Stern?
Well, I just think we haven't touched on the money angle. Bing with all the money. And Hope might try something like this. He'd say, Bing, Crosby has so much money, I understand that Crosby just bought a new Cadillac. The Cadillac is so big that he had to buy a Crosby to ride from the front to the rear. We could try a joke like Crosby might say to Hope, he bought a new Cadillac, which is so big that he bought a Crosby to ride from the front to the rear. We could try a joke.
Leonard, everybody is with you.
Was that Leonard Stern or a broken record we heard?
I should say everybody is with you except your tongue. Surprise?
We could try a joke where Crosby bought a Cadillac. And... No, I think as what Leonard said, I think there's an idea there. Yeah, but the little cars, the thing you could do jokes on, it's an exaggeration thing, you know. All the radio and picture people now are getting these little foreign cars. You can say, I saw one car the other day that was so small, in the back, instead of a trunk, it had a tobacco pouch.
Very good. Mr. Ware?
And the glove compartment was so small it can only hold two fingers.
That's a nice extension, Mr. Stern.
The cigarette lighter was so small it only lit butts.
Good. This is really going someplace. You want it back, Mr. Price?
You can say the car only had three gears. First, second, and second and seven-eighths.
Mr. Field.
The spare tire was so small, instead of a spare tire, they had a cherry lifesaver with white mint sidewalls.
No, Mr. Price,
I think
we have enough interview jokes with Bing Crosby and Bob Hope. Now, let's follow Miss O'Hara's suggestion that we do a satire on Bob Hope's new movie, Pale Face. Do you have any suggestions there? Mr. Price, I saw you...
Well, I wrote on the script that picture, and in a minor capacity, and despite it was a good picture. And as you know, it's a Western with Jane Russell as the star. And I think, as a satire, we could just say a modern, real modern Western on the radio sketch where the Indians, instead of shooting flaming arrows into the stagecoach, they're throwing Ronson lighters into a Studebaker.
That sounds all right to me. If you gentlemen are satisfied with that premise, we can go along and get into the wild and woolly west. How about
that's
that?
Good. The wide open spaces.
All right, Mr. Peter.
You know, that's different from that Philadelphia with those rooms crowded, you know.
The room is so crowded they had to give it out according to the state. Like Texas was the biggest state that they gave it. And California.
What is that?
It's a good finish. I can't get to it.
All right, Cindy, I'm afraid we'll still have to come back to it again. You don't think you can take it from there? No, he's on the floor again. Mr. Stern?
Well, we could make the scene, a Western saloon, and Hope walks in because he's in the saloon. Hope says, howdy, partner. He says, my name is Montana. Is my friends call me Montana. Is my folks call me Montana. He says, and you can call me Montana. Crosby says, where are you from? Hope says, New Jersey.
Mr. Price.
Hope could say, I'm really tough. He says, I have a brother. My brother's name is Rattlesnake. And I got another brother named Poison, and another brother named Blood, and another brother named Cutthroat. Says, Ma just had another baby. You named him George. And Crosby says, well, how come you named this baby George? And Hope says, we had to. It was a girl.
Mr. Stern.
Well, in all Hope and Crosby movies, they do these comedy songs. And I don't think that we actually could do a comedy song, but we might think up some... funny titles.
Yeah, they're always a good source of comedy. Do you have one that you can give us?
Well, how about if you knew Susie like I know Susie, you'd go out with Henrietta?
That's a good song title. Do you have another, Mr. Ware?
Yes, how about Carolina Moon? What are you doing over Kansas City?
That's very good. Mr. Field.
I found $1 million baby, but I'd rather have the cash. I didn't mean it when I said drop dead, baby, so please get up and go home.
Good title. Mr. Stern?
Get back to the Western. Hope could... Hope could say a partner... A partner...
Sounds like a silent partner, you know.
Sounds like he dissolved his partnership.
Wait, I got the thought. He says, partner, you should have been here last night. He says, we had a wonderful time. We had 12 girls over from the dance hall, and we played Pony Express. And Crosby says, what's Pony Express? Hope says, post office with a little more horsing around.
Mr. Warren.
Well, this might be a switch on that. They could have played airmail. That's post office on a higher plane.
Oh. Oh,
Mr. Fields?
Well, as long as they're going along in that direction, they can still be in this bar arguing forth and back, and Crosby says, "Partner?" I got Leonard Stern's partner now. He says, "Partner, we need someone who knows the Indian territory. We need someone to guide us." And an old-timer gets up, and he says, "How about me? I fought here. Why, I fought in the Indian wars for 3 different years, he says. They don't call me Cactus Pants for nothing. I shoot straighter than any man in the West. They don't call me Cactus Pants for nothing. He's, I can find a lost trail like nobody. They don't call me Cactus Pants for nothing." And then Hope says, "Sit down," and says, "I can't sit down. They don't call me Cactus Pants for nothing."
All right, gentlemen, I think we've managed to put together a rough draft of the script that Maureen O'Hara called for. Now, before we conclude our comedy writing session on the air, I'm sure that our listeners would be interested in hearing some behind-the-scenes anecdotes with the funny men that you've written for. Mr. Waris?
Well, one incident happened once. It was right after rehearsal, and we were all sitting around backstage, and Crosby's four boys came in. They were on their way home, and they dropped in to say hello. And the youngest one, little Lindsay, he ran over to Bing, and he began to beg him for a drum. Oh, that little kid wanted a drum so badly. And he teased about it and begged, and finally Bing put little Lindsay on his knee, and he said to him, "Lenny boy, I've been thinking about this, and I don't think I should get you a drum." He says, "After all, when we're at home, sometimes I want to read the newspaper, or I want to read a book, or I want to listen to some records, or I have to be on the telephone." He says, "And you'll be walking around the house beating that drum and disturbing me." And little Lindsay looked up at Bing very soulfully, and he said, "Daddy," he says, "I promise you, if you get me that drum, I'll only play it when you're asleep."
Very good. Mr. Price?
Well, let's just start with a little story. We kicked around when, during the last part of the war, we traveled with Bob Hope's show, and the writers were always sitting around someplace in an open field talking about girls and girls. And one of the writers was going with a twin. At the time, we used to kid him about it a lot, and he admitted a lot of embarrassing mistakes. Actually came up. Both the twins were the same height, the same color hair, same color eyes. But he said he studied him. He got out of the system, and he studied them, and it took him about 4 weeks, but he finally got so he could tell which one was Mary Jane and which one was Herman.
Mr. Stern.
Well, you know, publicity is important to all performers. And this concerns Milton Berle. Milton was in a show at the time. We were doing a radio program, and he couldn't find his name in any newspaper, any magazine, any periodical. No matter where he looked, his name wasn't mentioned in any paper, and he got quite upset, and finally he called up his press agent, Marty Ragaway, and he said, "Marty, come on over here. I want to speak to you." Marty came over, and Berle said, "Marty, what is this?" He says, "I can't find my name in the papers. I don't see it in magazines." He says, "There's no publicity about me. He says, nobody's speaking about me." And Marty said, "You're wrong, Milton." He says, "Everybody in town is speaking about you." And Burrow said, "Oh, yeah, what are they saying?" And Marty said, "Whatever happened to Milton Berle?"
Well, that's all the time we have anyhow for our anecdotes tonight. We've had a comedy show written on the air and some stories about America's top comedians. And now, as the little Fisk boy says, it's time to retire. So join us again next week for another session, won't you? This is Ben Brady saying goodnight for Sid Fields, Roger Price, Leonard Stern, Snag Waris, and the Comedy Writers Show.
Tune in next week to hear the writers for Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Abbott and Costello, and Eddie Cantor in their transcribed comedy writing session on the air. Maureen O'Hara, who suggested tonight's outline, can soon be seen in The Wrong Denial. This is a Frank Cooper presentation and is produced and directed by Cy Fisher.
Hungry people are not a peaceful people. That's why it is up to America and other well-fed nations to lend a hand overseas. That's why CARE, spelled C-A-R-E, is doing all it can to send aid where it is most needed. For only $10, CARE will guarantee delivery of a food package to a hungry family overseas. So lend a hand. Send your CARE package today by sending $10 to CARE, that's C-A-R-E, CARE, New York City. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.